This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Thank you so much that you said you'd come on and tell us your story and talk about brain tumor support. So take us back to when you first started having symptoms that then led up to your diagnosis. Okay. Take us back.
I remember I was working at the time in a bank, and I had a lot of responsibility with my work, and I was speaking to people whose work I was correcting. I was an auditor, and I was trying to explain a mistake to somebody that they'd made within their documentation. And I just couldn't get to the point. And I was wondering why I was rambling when I was talking. But I don't know how. I just went on and on rambling, and I couldn't get to the point. So somehow the phone call ended, and that was just what seemed to be a sporadic episode. And then I think this is all with hindsight. I can say I was bumping into doors. I was very clumsy. I was dropping like pens, like small items. I didn't seem to have a good grip on them. But they were little things that didn't really seem to amount to much. And I was having a lot of headaches, like daily, but it seemed to go with my job because I spent 10 hours at the computer reading files, really intense files, and then typing up documents about these files. So it went hand in hand with my job, and I thought that was just tired eyes and tired mind, tired brain. Until one day I had a sort of really strange feeling on my face, and I couldn't feel half of my face. And I could run my finger across my forehead and across my nose, and I could feel one half of my nose, but I couldn't feel the other half. So my right side, I just couldn't feel anything. And I couldn't feel my eyelids, or if I was blinking, I didn't feel anything. And my husband and I had been gardening. We were trying to put some block paving or something, and it was really cold. And I thought, it's really cold on the right side. The wind must have been coming the right side. And that's what it is. It froze half my face. But during one phone call with my parents, I mentioned to my I had this facial experience where I didn't feel half of my face. I didn't have any sensation on this. And my father was a practicing GP, a doctor in Italy. And when he heard that, he was alarmed. But he didn't tell me over the phone. And at the time, my husband and he was my fiancé, so we were making plans to get married. And I was going to Italy because we were married in Italy, in my hometown. So I was going to Italy to make arrangements for the wedding. And I think I was going to book the wedding. I was going to have my dress fittings. So I went to see my family, and my dad said, I think the next time you come, we'll just do some checks. I always trusted my dad to look after my health, and I never questioned what checks or what he wanted to do. I just thought, he's got something in mind. And so I thought, we'll just do a check and it'll be fine. And my fiance gave me that time. It was the time that we were publishing the bands in the church. And so we all went together, but I had my MRI. So my dad, my fiance, and I went for a brain scan because my dad had arranged this. From the symptoms that I told him about my face, he was worried enough to arrange a brain scan. My then boyfriend said, I think your dad is a bit over the top about this. And I said, just let him get on with it. He's arranged it. I'll just go through the motions. And never, ever did I ask him, what are you thinking, Dad? I just went in and had a brain scan. And it seems surreal now that I never questioned it. And I didn't ask him what his thoughts were. And then I came out of the scan, And I was in the waiting room, and it was just me and Daryl and my dad in the waiting room. And my dad had been in with the technician, and he'd seen what was coming up on the scans. And he was really shaking. I said, "Dad, what's wrong? What's up?" And he just told me they found something. They found a tumor. And I think what hurt me the most was the pain in my parents.
Yes.
As opposed to what I was going through.
Mm.
Yes. I don't know that I experienced my own emotional pain. I think because I was put in a situation of no choice, I just had to get on with it.
Yeah.
But seeing my family suffer was much harder.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the kind of, not that I had any control, but they didn't have any control. I knew how I was feeling. I just thought, I have to get on with this. Mm. Now I have a diagnosis. I need to find a specialist who can tell me what the next plan of action is, what happens next, what are the steps that take me further. And the holiday was over. My father had diagnosed this tumor. I had to go to the church with my husband. And in Italy, you exchange vows before the wedding in front of the priest when you publish the ban. So we had to say, in sickness and in health, having just found this out, and then go home and have a celebration with my family that we had just done this, whilst my mum had prepared this wonderful meal for us, and she didn't know what we'd found out.
Yeah.
And then when guests left, I was able to share the news with her. And again, this was a really hard part, because that broke me again. And she said, "Why couldn't I have had this diagnosis? Why did it have to happen to you?" Because I was 30 when I found out, and she felt I was beginning my life with my soon-to-be husband, and we were going to start a family, and instead this diagnosis came about. And I think quite often it's much harder for
me
to suffer, to go through, because we know our level of pain, and we know what we're dealing with. But for the carer, often it can be a bit of a mystery or a lot of the unknown. And it's such a huge, scary subject that sometimes even those closest to you don't want to ask you those really big questions, and maybe don't feel equipped to deal with what answers you might give them. It's a very scary time.
Mm.
Because everything is so unknown, and you're faced with your own mortality, which normally you don't have to deal with. We don't on a daily basis. We don't have to think about that.
Yeah.
So when I came back to the UK and had to go back to work, I had to tell my employers what my diagnosis was, and then I had to go about finding the right treatment. And so I was very lucky to have access to surgery quite quickly, and because I'd had a prior MRI for ear problems, the tumor wasn't there 4 years before, so it had grown in the space of 4 years, which was very unusual for the type of tumor that I had. I had a meningioma, which is a non-cancerous, I think it's called a low-grade tumor.
Do you know what type of meningioma it was?
It was potentially atypical, so not because it grew so quickly. And my surgeon kept saying to me, "I think you've had it for many years." And I had to bring in my previous MRI, showing him that it had grown in the space of 4 years, because he said you could have had it from birth and it could have grown very slowly over the space of 30 years. But I had the proof that 4 years prior, I didn't have it. My brain was completely clear in the previous MRI for my ear. So after I had surgery to remove it, I had some personality change. And to be honest, after surgery, my life did change completely, because I live with what some might call collateral damage from the tumor, potentially from the surgery, because brain surgery in itself is a very controlled type of brain injury. They have to, cut you open and go in and cut parts out. So it's necessary to save your life, because the tumor left untreated would have ultimately killed me. But with the treatment itself is an injury to the brain, a controlled and necessary one. So I'm left with damage to the brain, but I have a life and I have a quality of life. But I lost my job because I couldn't return to doing the things I was doing. And frankly, I have a lot of brain fatigue every day. I suffer with chronic migraines. I'm on quite a large dose of medication that I have to take daily to prevent these daily migraines. Otherwise, I just wouldn't be able to function normally and get up and just have normal daily life. So if I come off my migraine medication, then I can expect to have chronic persistent migraines, you know, almost every day. And then if I don't have a migraine every day, I've had 15 days worth of migraines, like 15 days in a row. And I don't know if it's the same migraine or if it's a new one. But then afterwards, I just feel exhausted and wasted. And I think I need to stay in bed to recover from the migraine. But it's very hard to just stay in bed.
Yeah.
You push yourself and then you can make it worse. And yeah.
What was the year you're diagnosed?
2006.
So you've quite had to deal with the migraines ever since then. Gosh.
Ever since, yes. And the migraines is just one part of it.
Yeah.
It's just one part. And I would say that anything, the fatigue, the daily mental fatigue, it's a hidden disability. Mm. Nobody can see it. Nobody can really understand it. And the only one who really gets it is Daryl, my husband. And I tell you who else gets it. He lives with me. He sees it. He totally understands it. He knew me before the brain tumor for 6 years or whilst it was growing. And he's known me after a surgery. So he knows the change. And other people who get it would be people with the same kind of experience who've had brain tumors. And then we desperately wanted to start a family, and I thought, this can never happen. I am so unwell and so tired and so fatigued. And then by the time we were trying to have a family, we were told we couldn't, I was too old. And then just a miracle happened when I was 40 and Gaia was born. She was born on my 40th birthday.
Oh, that's lovely.
And so we have
joint party.
It was like the best gift.
Yeah,
my party in hospital at giving birth, just me, Daryl, and Gaia being born. And she's fantastic. I'm so fortunate. I am so fortunate. And I would say that in the stories of brain tumours, I feel like mine is a fairy tale.
Mm.
And I always say it. I count myself very fortunate. And I have Gaia, and she is wonderful. And I can't afford to have 15 days in bed with a migraine and then stay in bed and recover from that migraine. I need to be up. I need to enjoy Gaia. I need to look after her. And that's my priority. And I love doing it.
I was really put off having children because of my fatigue and because my days are one day I'm okay and the next day I need to sleep. I just don't have the energy. And it did put me off, and I haven't even thought about it. Like, I've thought, I feel like I'm missing out. All my friends have children. But I'm also like, I just don't think I could have coped. And I don't think I could have been a very good mum. I would have constantly been pushing them over to someone else to look after them. So it did put me off. But did you feel like you were worried at first, but actually you've been able to find the strength you need? Yeah, it must have been.
I think, I was terrified until I was married at 30, and then Gaia was born when I was 40. So I had 10 years to have the same thoughts that you're describing. 10 years of procrastinating and thinking, shall I have a family? Am I even fit enough? Am I healthy enough to have a family? And watching all my friends have children with the ups and downs. And I dreamt of having 6 children when I was younger. Goodness, that would have destroyed me.
Yeah.
Like, brave or crazy, I don't know what that is. I just realized that, I don't know, it wasn't something I was prepared to
miss out on.
And let go of in my life. And I think because of my aging, I just thought, time is really running out. And I'm not somebody who wants to live with regrets. And I thought it's now or never. But it was a very difficult decision to make because they think there's not a lot of research, but it's believed that meningiomas are linked to hormones. And so even pregnancy can represent a risk to recurrence, to the tumor coming back. And so I wanted to, and I consulted my surgeon and said, what should I do? What are the risks? And he very kindly got in touch and said, just, you shouldn't live with regrets. And if that's something you want to do, you should follow your heart. And then you can always have follow-up MRIs after birth, after breastfeeding because of the hormone levels. And now I'm at a different stage of life in my late 40s where I'm perimenopausal and I'm having to think, can I take HRT? And the advice is actually for me, in my case, unless my symptoms are really unbearable through the menopause, to stay off hormones. HRT.
Yeah.
Because of the risk of recurrence. Mm. So it's not a problem that is resolved. It's a problem that lifelong
ramifications from what's happened can it just
yes that's it
I think that's the word
yeah they stay yeah the ramifications is a really good word. And I was saying the people who get it are people who are in the same circumstances as you, and that's where I found support from Brain Tumor Support, the charity. At the time of my diagnosis, I couldn't get to them. There wasn't enough support nearby, so it was something that I had to handle by myself. And I didn't want to share my darkest thoughts or fears with those closest to me because I thought they're worried enough. And sometimes there are frustrations or things the nuance of which they might not get. But when you are sat around people who, you know, like you and I, might understand something straight away because you've walked in those same shoes. And it's not to say that people can't understand because they're lacking empathy or something. It's not about that at all. But it's about saying that the shared understanding of someone who's had the same experience is invaluable when you're having support from others who've been through the same experience, not necessarily with the same tumor, but who know what those darkest thoughts are like, who know what that uncertainty feels like, who know when I say mental fatigue, exactly what that feels like.
Yeah. And you reached out and to find Brain Tumor Support, but before, how long did it take for you from your sort of diagnosis and your treatment to looking and to finding a charity or a support group to join?
Years. So it took me, it might have been 5 years.
But I think when you and I had ours, I think because when you and I had it, there was no support groups and there was also no social media. So we were like really stone age. There was not much there. Yeah. And then obviously now it's massively different. There's so much support out there if you go and look. So you joined Brain Tumor Support, but how did you find them?
I found them online. So I did find them online, but their support group was initially in Bristol. And because I was so fatigued, even at the time, even physically, I couldn't get on a bus to go to Bristol and then be in a support group and get on a bus to come back to town, or even a train, or even two methods of transport. That was unthinkable. And so I just couldn't go, and I had to go without the support until a few years later. A support group was started by Brain Tumor Support in Cheltenham. And then I thought, wow, I've won the lottery. Like, I can finally go. But I was in different circumstances then. When I went, it was years after my surgery, and I was able to drive again. And my sort of stamina had improved. And so I was there more to support others who were at the beginning of their journey, so they'd just been diagnosed. And that gave me enormous strength. It's incredible. And I didn't think I needed that strength, but I did, without even knowing it. And just knowing that talking to somebody about my experience gave them hope It's unbelievable. I didn't know that helped, because I never had it. I just thought that brain surgery was some kind of Frankenstein procedure that I was going to have, because I'd never met anybody that had brain surgery before. I didn't know what it was going to look like, what I was going to look like at the end. I didn't know if I would be on a wheelchair for the rest of my life. I just had no concept of what this would be like for me. And as much as the surgeon could explain, there are still so many variables and unknowns. He couldn't tell me what my fate would be, because there are risks associated with the surgery, and he couldn't assure me as to how it would go, because it just happens in theatre. But if I met people in a group that had undergone surgery, and I could see them with my own eyes and ask them questions, that would have given me so much reassurance. And that would have answered so many questions without even asking them. Just being with these people would have helped. Mm. And so when I went to the support group, I met this man who his wife had been diagnosed with the same type of tumor in a different location in the brain, and she was to be having surgery with the same surgeon as me. So I could tell him, hey, look, I had this tumor and I had that surgeon, and like I could give him some of my feelings about the surgeon, and I can say he was really warm, and he's an expert at what he's doing, but he also had this incredible bedside manner, and he was really respectful, and he was really warm when he was explaining things to me, and he made me feel really calm in his presence, and I could trust him. And these are things that you can't convey through a letter. The surgeon can't tell you that through a letter or a telephone call. And so this was invaluable. And he went and told his wife. And initially she refused coming to meetings. And then she came. And then I met her. And then she had surgery. And things went well for her. She's my daughter's godmother. Oh. And last night I sat with Paul and Beth in my daughter's Easter like school recital.
Oh, wow.
We were all there together at the school. I've made lifelong friends because of brain tumor support, because they allowed us to sit together and offered us this space for support.
Yeah.
And it's so important. It's so important that we have each other in our life. Have this shared experience. Just, I don't know if I can put across enough how important it is.
When people go to the brain tumor support groups, what is it like? What's the first thing they're going to see, and what happens?
There are groups for low-grade tumors. There are groups for higher grade tumours. There are, I think they offer groups for bereaved families. But the groups that I went to, it was like friendly faces. And there were professional support workers. And if they identified that someone was struggling because of group discussions, so they acted almost as mediators within the conversation that was being held. And if somebody was struggling, they would have one-to-ones with them. But brain tumor support don't just offer support groups face-to-face. They can offer telephone support. They can offer one-to-one personal support. They have counsellors or counselling on a one-to-one basis. They even offer support via text messages if someone doesn't feel like speaking or is having difficulty speaking because of their brain tumour. The levels of supports they offer vary to suit the individual needs. So if somebody's threatened by that group situation because maybe they're feeling shy, or maybe they're not feeling up to it, or maybe they get really fatigued talking and listening and having the noise of a group, there is so much that can be offered. There are online rooms that are also monitored by brain tumor support, so they're available for people. I think the main thing to remember is like individual support. So it's time that they're offering people, so that each person is getting what they need, as opposed to it's a one thing fits all. And they go beyond. It's an emotional support charity, but they go beyond supporting you just emotionally. They also offer support for claiming welfare benefits. And these forms are incredibly hard to fill in, especially when your brain is totally incapable of processing something like one of those really difficult documents. Mm. I was in banking and I was dealing with really detailed documents and I was auditing them. I struggle with that language now, having recovered from my surgery, let's say, because it's so many years ago. But I struggle with that language now. So I need somebody to act as a translator or as an aid towards that. And I don't know, I can't stress how personalized their support is and tailored to what people's needs are. But unfortunately, they're also facing a sort of difficult time at the moment because as much as they offer, because their services aren't considered essential services, they don't receive statutory funding, or they don't, less than 1% of their funding is statutory funding. So how they make up the funding to keep going for their service is through fundraising. So it's like for people who fundraise for them or applying to funds and trusts for funds to come in that way. And that's such a struggle, especially now with the cost of living crisis, where we're all having to budget for everything, even our weekly shops. For a charity that provides so much to rely on people to fundraise for them and not have actual statutory funding come their way, it's really difficult. And when you have a diagnosis, as much as research would be important to find out how to cure these things that we have, but I have the diagnosis. What I need now is support and help. The research doesn't help me now. The research will hopefully help people in the future, but I know we need both. But what I needed the most was support there and then.
And that's basically
help through.
Yeah, and that charity is about support. It's not about research. It's not about any of the medical.
It's not about research. No,
it's having support.
Emotional support, which isn't considered an essential service, and that's why they can't get statutory funding, or they get less than 1% statutory funding. They've launched a campaign that's called SOS, Save Our Support, asking people to contribute what they can. And it's on their website, which is Brain Tumor Support. I don't know if any listeners have anything to give, but my dream is that somebody, a philanthropist, somebody who can take this to heart, will come and save Brain Tumor Support. My wish is that they stay around and they can continue to do the amazing work that they do.
One of the things they do every year is they have a massive conference, don't they? And they invite people to come in, and which is what you and I were one of the speakers for. And they get people to come down. You have a 3-day, I can't remember if it was 3 or 4, but it's a weekend basically. And it's normally over a long weekend. And they have people coming in and they have speakers. They have not just us where we were telling our stories, but they have professionals. They have neurosurgeons.
Yes. They come have neurosurgeons. Yes.
Yeah. And they come and speak. Yeah. And I'll never forget when I did go and we were both there at the same time, and there was that neurosurgeon stood up, and when I was speaking there, I was telling my story, and I don't know the ins and outs of the specific type of, I knew my tumor was an intraventricular meningioma, but I didn't know the ins and outs of it. And I remember I think one of the gentlemen, he asked me and said, because mine was 10 centimeters, they said, how did that tumor fit? How was that in the brain without causing problems until near the end? And I couldn't answer that question. So neurosurgeon, he stood up and answered the question for me and explained how the brain compensates. Yeah. And he said, and the tumor would have grown and the pathways would have moved differently around it. So would have been functioning even with this big tumor.
Yeah.
And that was just fascinating. And I wouldn't have been able to get those questions had I have not met this person, and we wouldn't have been able to ask those questions, but you can, and they do have people to give that information, and you just get to have a bit more of an understanding of what's happened to you and like why things have happened the way they have. And then other things, didn't they? They have other things. They have an art class that they do while you're there. And then I'm trying to think of all the other things. They did the yoga class. And
yeah, I remember they had, I remember two things. They had somebody look after our children. So like I could be without Gaia. I think Gaia was 5 at the time. So they took her swimming and then they did some art with her. Like when we were doing our talk, because I didn't want her to be there during the talk about my story. And then also when you were saying they had the professionals, they had this chap, and I don't remember his name, but he was a neuropsychologist. And he was awesome because he was explaining things about the damage to the brain and how that can show itself in daily functions and, you know, what a damaged brain can do and how it shows itself. And what he was explaining, I was thinking, I've got that and I've got that and I've got that. And I was like, just scribbling down notes. I've lost the notes. Goodness knows where they are. But I was thinking, you're talking about me. Like, that's me. And I never felt so validated that a professional in his field was explaining this brain damage. Because sometimes when I talk to people and I say, I'm trying to explain what brain damage looks like, oh, they say, oh, I get that, I get that, oh, I get that.
I get tired.
And I think they want to, yeah, I get tired, or I forget things, or we all make those mistakes. And I think they want to make me feel better.
Yeah.
Maybe that about having this. And it doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel invalidated, like I'm making stuff up. But it's my reality every... it's my reality every day. And I am exhausted. And I wasn't like that before. And okay, it's a long time, and I'm sure age is creeping in and is making things a little bit worse as well. And I'm sure menopause will have an effect on it as well. But actually, this came straight after my brain surgery. So it is brain damage. And I've lost my job because of it. And I can't go back to permanent, you know, regular employment. It's not because I'm lazy and it's not because I don't want to. It's because my brain can't function that way. And it's very difficult. Not that I need to justify myself to anybody, but sometimes it feels like I'm in that situation. And it doesn't matter. Those are not the people that matter in my life. But sometimes I'm faced with those conversations and they're really hard to have. So when somebody who is a professional is explaining those symptoms as brain damage, and I'm going, he's talking about me. He knows me.
It does feel, yeah, it did feel like that.
Yeah, it's incredibly validating. It's so important.
What would you say was the toughest challenges that survivors face?
I think it's the hidden symptoms. I think you just get on. I'm not resentful about anything. And like I said before, I am the fairy tale story, and I am very grateful for the quality of life that I have in spite of everything. It can be very challenging to appear a perfectly healthy person and to actually have all the hidden symptoms, what you might call a hidden disability or the hidden brain injury. It's not, I don't have a broken leg in plaster, so you can't see it. And I don't have a bandaged head. So I think that, and having to deal with it on a daily basis, sometimes it gets to me. So that sometimes makes me feel sad that I have limitations that I wouldn't otherwise have. But that's a very small thing in the grand scheme of things. So I would say that daily, the biggest struggle is the hidden disabilities.
Is there anyone that you want to say thank you to?
Aside from my husband.
We can't not say your husband.
We can't not say my husband. I cannot say brain tumour support. They have put people, they've been invaluable. I am a strong advocate for what they do, for the help they provide. They have put people in my lives who will be in my lives forever, forever. They are my chosen family. And there's not just Beth and Paul. There's Bridget, there are more people who are in my life thanks to them. So yes, thank you to Brain Tumor Support. And it is a wide family network. It's more than just a charity. Marilyn, a nurse from the Philippines. Oh, she was awesome. She was awesome. She took such good care of me. She was amazing. She was just beautiful. She looked after me so much. And then the nurse who got me out of bed and showered me on the third day, they looked after me. I really felt their love.
What was it like getting out? What was it like having that shower the 3 days later, having that nice warm shower and not being bed bath?
I was really scared, to wash my hair. I was really scared to wash my hair because I had all these 70 staples in my head. I didn't know there were 70. My surgeon, because I asked my surgeon how many staples do I have before they had to be taken out. He said 35. And then I said, can I take them home? And obviously being in banking, I counted them. And I said, you lied. There were 70. And he said, I didn't tell you, 35 on each side.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you take them?
Yeah, I was really scared of having my hair washed. You become so vulnerable. You become so incredibly vulnerable because this huge thing has happened to you.
Thank you so much that you took the time. And thank you. And for telling us about Brain Tumor Support, because it would be such a shame if they can't carry on doing what they're doing, because it's an amazing charity, and like the people that are there, they are like family together. So it's a really lovely place. Yeah. It would be such a shame not to be able to keep it going. So yeah, we'll put the link on so people can go and have a look.
Thank you for giving me the space to share the story and also to explain about the value of brain tumor support. I hope they're here for the foreseeable future to help many as they've helped me.
Yeah,
thank you, Claire.
Too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye, Claire. Bye. Thank you.
This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.